and welcome to the brand new You Show, the podcast dedicated to helping you clearly and confidently market your brand so you flourish. I'm your host, Ryan Roten, and today's guest is Kelly Glover. Kelly is the founder of The Talent Squad, where, among other things, she and her team book podcast tours for entrepreneurs so they can build brand awareness and equity. Kelly, welcome to the brand new You Show.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me on the show.
Yeah, this is going to be a meta show, talking about podcasts onto a podcast.
Yes.
That must be pretty cool.
In for a penny, in for a pound. Let's do it.
All right. So I do have one question, though, before I dive into the topics that I like to ask all my guests before we get started, which is, if you could vacation in only one place for the rest of your vacation days, where would you go?
I have thought about this, and I still love London.
London.
Even though it's not an island, but it's lots to do, and it is close to Europe. I had a big think about it, yeah.
All right, awesome. I don't think anybody's ever said London, but I did have somebody name an entire continent recently. So,
well, that's cheating. You need to be more specific on the question. They did answer the question, Ryan.
Yeah, 100%. It was your continent too, by the way, so she may come visit you.
Oh, that's fine. Well, Australia is a country and a continent and an island, so really it is the triple threat of... answers. So I, well done.
Yeah, I gave her kudos for that. And now I'm afraid from now on, I'm only going to get one of seven answers anytime I ask that question.
No, cheating.
All right. So we're going to talk about podcasts today. But before we get into that, I understand you used to be an intern in Hollywood.
Yes.
Tell me about that. What's that like? Because it sounds really exciting.
It is exciting. So I was at college in Ohio University.
Okay.
And being an Australian, I'd heard about this whole intern thing and everyone seemed to be doing cool things. So I applied to everywhere in New York and one place in Los Angeles. And the internship I got accepted to was the one in Los Angeles, which was Miramax. And this was back in 2001. So Facebook hadn't been invented. Nobody had a mobile phone. We were still using like MapQuest print out a paper map. So the fact that I'm alive today is quite amazing because I got a call on a phone that was connected to a wall from a girl in Wisconsin saying, do you want to share an apartment with me? Yes, I do. Sent her money to an apartment none of us had ever been to in Los Angeles, and it all worked out. It was the best thing ever. I ended up being the MC at her wedding, and
oh, wow.
Also people that we interned with have now gone on to be heads of movie studios, and you see their name at the beginning of films. It was amazing.
That's pretty cool. So what did you do at Miramax? What was your role for the summer or winter or whatever your internship was?
Yeah, so it was a summer internship and we worked in the TV department, and that was still Miramax Films in the building, and it was Project Greenlight at the time with Matt and Ben. When you're an intern, you kind of work in all the departments doing all kinds of things, and it's admin stuff. Like, mate, no, I wasn't directing TV shows. Let's make no mistake. I wasn't in charge of anything beyond a buddy.
Sure. Everybody needs coffee,
right? Eraser and a paperclip. Yeah. But I also did an internship at the same time. So I did two at one time.
Oh, wow.
I was an entertainment reporter for, it was called zaptoit.com. They do TV now, but back then I was in the movie department. So I used to, again, iPhones were just coming in, and so I was with a little tape recorder, you know, the tiny mini tape recorders.
Oh yeah, I remember.
I would show up at the red carpet interviews. I did lots of them with my little tape recorder and interview all the celebrities. So that was a pretty great job. I think people discount the importance of being a great interviewer, but it really teaches you those techniques. It was fun and games. It absolutely was. And I got to meet tons of celebrities, ask all these questions, go to all film studio lots, screening rooms in cool chairs with unlimited snack bars. Hello, dream life. But learning to break the tape is what I was taught, and all the techniques from journalists was invaluable.
It's funny that you, sorry, I got to go back. It's funny you say the tiny tape recorder and
and
phones that were plugged into the wall, because I tell my children this, but when I went to college, the internet didn't exist. Email didn't exist. And if you needed a computer to type up a paper, you had to reserve a computer in a room on campus to go there and type up your paper.
The computer lab. Yeah.
Yeah.
if you were lucky. And yeah. If it worked, you were lucky.
And whenever they had it available. So if it was 2 a.m, guess when you were typing your paper. So anyway, you interviewed lots of people on the red carpet. Who is your favorite celebrity you've talked to?
Oh, Robert Patrick, who was the metal guy in the Terminator, you know, the liquid metal guy.
Right. Yeah.
And he's not the most famous by any means, but he was just a great interview, really charismatic, excellent answers, super fun, gave a lot of stuff. It wasn't just the normal blah, blah, blah that you get from everyone. So he was my favorite interview of all time.
Nice.
And some of the people that I looked forward to the most, so let down, can't even watch their TV shows anymore. Horrible.
Really?
Yeah, because they're actors, you know, they're actors for a reason.
So who
you think you're going to get and who you actually get are not the same person sometimes. If you really like somebody, never meet them in person because it'll ruin your life.
Disappoint you.
Yeah. The other thing on the little mini tape recorders is I had to sit down and play it, transcribe it, rewind it, play it, that would take hours and hours. And we were just before in the green room before we got on this interview speaking about Descript, where you can now edit audio from a transcript. That is literally 3 or 4 hours of work that I would have to do painstakingly sitting down. So, and that's something else I love about radio, about podcasting, about personal branding is having that history and seeing we've come from to now in such a short period of time. It's living in a science experiment. It's amazing.
Yeah. And just think what's going to happen over the next couple of years too.
Yeah.
Amazing. So obviously interviewing has prepared you extremely well for podcasting, but how did you get into podcasting? Like, what was it that made you go, you know what, I should give that a try?
Yeah. So there were a few more steps between 2001 to little tiny tape recorders to podcasting. So I ended up working for a talent agency and then doing some community radio on the side, deciding, yeah, I'm pretty good at this. I'll apply for the National Radio School. Like they take 10 people. I'll never get in.
Why not?
Somehow got in. Ended up as a radio announcer, had a syndicated show, moved back to Los Angeles. And with this accent, could not get a job on radio. So from that, I went into podcasting.
It's the perfect accent for radio.
You thought I thought deluded, untrue, jump in without the parachute and go splat on the concrete. But it did work out because I ended up writing show notes for a company, then booking for a company, then producing for a women's network and, you know, making those shows garnered millions of downloads and mid six figures, and then starting my own agency. So I'm in podcasting because I failed as a radio announcer, and everyone in radio, they were laughing at me, and now they're knocking on my door. So it's amazing how things change and turn around, and I love it.
I'll say this lightly, but we know how easy it is to start a podcast. Yet most people, when they hear that you have a podcast, they still have this mystique about it. It's kind of like, oh, you're on a TV show. Wait, you have your own podcast? Oh my gosh, that's amazing. But it's not really as hard to start them as what a lot of people think it is.
You can get a podcast up in a day. The only thing that will hold you back is how long it takes for Apple to say yes and put it through. But usually I find that it takes no time. So if you've got a microphone and a laptop and you've got a Libsyn account, which you can get for $5 a month, you've got yourself a podcast.
Yeah.
Even if you just do it to get it up there, to get it going, to learn how to do it yourself, then you can get a podcast within a day.
Yeah. Just yes. And don't let the tech and all that stuff bother you, because you can start like I started simple with a laptop, a very inexpensive mic that I used for I think my first 50 to 75 episodes, something like that.
What
like,
mic?
Like literally Ryan, it was a $20 mic, an ATR 2100, which I don't even think they make anymore.
I've got one of those as well. They're great. Yeah. They make them there now like a USB-C, but yeah, it's still basically it's a USB mic that you can plug into your computer.
Yeah. And that's all I did. And I recorded my first 4 or 5 episodes solo. And then I thought, oh, why don't I start interviewing people? And that's what most of them have been ever since. So
at the Talent Squad, we say practice in private before you go public. So you can get all this going and practice it, and you don't even have to publish it. And if you do publish it, you can delete it, because how many people are really listening in the beginning? Right. So if you just get it up and going and getting it out there, and even if you don't get it out there and you just practice, you know how to do it. So by the time you're ready to officially publish and put it out to the world, you know what you're doing. Right. So, and it doesn't have to be expensive. You're right.
And I'm sure you hear this a lot too. Some people are like, oh, nobody wants to hear me. Everything I'd want to say, everybody else has already said. But what I always tell people is there is someone out there in the world waiting to start doing something, but they need to hear it from you, not somebody else.
Why does a podcast have to be for anybody else anyway? If you're running a business or doing something for yourself, sometimes it's a way for you to speak out what you want. And like you said, using Descript and all these different platforms, you can pull in the audio. So you can even do a podcast for your own content. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have to be for anyone to ever listen ever, because that podcast that you're making, you just said you did the first 5 episodes to yourself. Yep. If you pull that and get the transcript, you could have an ebook, you could have a blog post, you could have any number of pieces of content, because sometimes you can say things in a different way than you would type it or think it when it comes out in a conversation.
Yes.
So I think if you're thinking of podcasts just as external facing, you're not thinking of how big the medium can be and for what uses.
Well, let's talk about the Talent Squad and how you help folks get going, because there's a bunch of different things that you do. For those people who have books or are known in a space, or even those people who aren't quite there yet, but they're getting there, what are some benefits of being on a podcast?
So the first is, like you said, it positions you in expert status. So it's authority, it's credibility, it's reputation, it's being known, and it's influence. So it strengthens your personal brand, and it's a way to communicate your expertise, but also amplify your message. So amplification is only as good as the message is. It's just making it louder. So if you've got nothing to say and you're not seen as an expert in your field, it's just going to make that bigger and everyone will know it. The other thing, it's access to audiences for that exposure. So you're accessing niche, established, and curated audiences. And even though millions of people can listen to it, one person can listen to it. It's really a one-to-one experience. When someone is listening to a podcast, it's you speaking to them, you're in their ears. So it's much more intimate than being on blast in a blog post or in a book or whatever. Also, it's relationships building, not only with the audience, because it does expedite that know, like, and trust factor. You can tell by somebody, you can tell right now if you like me or dislike me. Yeah. You can tell if you think you know what I'm talking about or if I'm full of it. And either way, it works for me and it works for you, because you're either going to want to approach me or you're going to be repelled by me and not be interested in. So, but in both cases, it's great, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But the other part of the relationship is with the host, because it really is high-level networking. So I've met you, Ryan, and now you might, oh, Kelly, she's good. You might refer people to me. I might refer people to you. But we're also professionally connected as well. So if we see each other at conferences, or there could be a partnership in there, there's any number of relationships. So this is as good as going to a conference, but, and especially in the time of, you know, pandemics and different things that happen in the world, it really is the podcast tour you can do, the speaking tour you can do without leaving the house. So I'm not going to be over in Denver anytime soon. You're not probably in Sydney anytime soon. But
unfortunately,
guess
what? No.
We've had this amazing conversation. So it's that high-end networking that I think is truly valuable. And also when it comes to podcasting, it's time. In a blog post, I might read the headline, I might read a couple of the things, I might scan through, but people look at podcasts as a whole. If you get in the car and start listening to a podcast and you pause it when you get to your destination, you're going to restart it up and get to the end of that destination. So it's almost like a book. I'm in the middle of a book. I'm in the middle of a podcast. Mm-hmm. You don't say I'm in the middle of a blog post. So I'm in the middle of a song. I'm in the middle of a radio segment. So people generally do listen to 30 to 60 minutes of you speaking, which is much more, even on a TV segment, you're on the Today Show. Well, that's 9 o'clock on a Tuesday morning for 3 minutes. But a blog post is a full 30 minutes. So you have the time, you have the one-on-one, you have the relationship. And then there's also, of course, the SEO on the other side. So it's not only the relationship through your ears, but okay, well, there's show notes to that, and then there's keywords, and then there's the transcript, so there's all the other things. I'll stop now, but I could go on, but there's a lot. There's huge benefits on so many levels to being on a podcast.
Right. It's funny you said the intimate piece of it. I remember the first time I was in an airport, and I was talking to my wife, and somebody comes up to me and taps me on the shoulder and says, "Are you Ryan Roten?" Like, yes. And she goes, "Oh my God, I work out to you every day. I thought that was you." I heard your voice and came over because I thought it was you. So that's how intimate it can be.
Well, that's the biggest compliment you can get ever.
Yeah.
Without doubt. So congratulations. If your voice is recognizable, that's amazing. You did a good job.
Well, it was to one person.
Doesn't matter. That one person
that I was talking about earlier who will now take action.
Yeah. Well, in radio, they used to say that for every one person that reacts, there's 10,000 people that aren't going to. So that's the one person that happened to see you that day at the gym and recognize your voice. Not at the gym, sorry. She worked out to you at the airport. But yeah.
Who makes good podcast guests? What do I, quote, need in order to be a podcast guest somewhere?
I think the first thing you need is to have a giving attitude and put it all on the table with actionable content. People listen to podcasts because they want to be able to do something at the end of the episode. So you need tactical, practical information. And instead of saying, in my book, will I do this? You have to find out, give everything. And don't be the hold it back person. So go with that attitude for sure. The other thing is having stories and practical examples, and you need to be, and I know the word authentic is overused, but you really do. Be who you are, say what you know, give it out there, go in with the attitude of helping people, and make sure you know your stuff. Speak on what you actually know.
How do I find shows to be on? Do I just get on Apple Podcasts and like search for shows that way? Or is there an easier way maybe?
Yeah. So there's tons of ways to look for podcasts, and it really is a bit like pulling a golden thread. So the first thing is, who do I want to speak to and what do I want them to do as a result of listening to me? So you need to figure out where your audience is and what they want to know. And then go there. So the first place is Google, and like do the easiest thing the first if you haven't done this before in finding shows. So it could be, I want to go on a gardening show. So it would be gardening podcast. It would be top 10 gardening podcasts. It could be top 10 organic gardening podcasts, whatever they are. And then you go in and you find one, and then you look at the related podcast, or you look at the host. Okay, there's the host. What shows have they been on? Then you look at the guests. Okay, well, there's this person that's been on. They've probably been on other podcasts. You look at that guest. What other podcasts have they been on? And that's pulling the golden thread and going down the rabbit hole. So you're looking at the topic, and you're looking at the talking points, you're looking at subgenres, you're looking at the host, you're looking at guests. And you're looking at related shows. So that's the best way to do it. Yes, you can go on iTunes. Yes, you can go on Stitcher. There's a few other podcasting sort of search engines that you can go on as well. The database and searchability of podcasts is not the best right now. So you will have to do a little bit of work in finding that way. So like Listen Notes is a great way to go and find podcasts as well. And you can look at the charts, top 10 podcasts, top 50 podcasts on Apple, but they are the most competitive ones. So if you're thinking of going on Tim Ferriss and Joe Rogan, I would say, who were the last five guests on that show? Are you in their league? If not, then make it a stretch goal. If it was Oprah, Vaynerchuk, and Branson, and you're not at that level, even though you may have a great story, you may not be there yet. So put that in the let's wait till I've done 100 podcasts before I approach them.
So let's say we found the right criteria. We know we're going to reach out to these certain people. Is there a key, or is there one thing that's like you recommend everybody needs to have this before you reach out to that host?
Yeah, there's a bunch of that stuff, but also in the vetting process, it's a two-way vetting process. So you need to figure out if they might be a fit for your show. Like, yeah, okay, great. I would love to go on Joe Rogan, but again, are you a fit for their show? And there's something called Podfade, which you would know quite well. And that is, there's a show, but you need to check that the show is current.
Yeah.
Because often they may not have published. I had a show probably 4 years ago and I still get pitched for it and I haven't done an episode in 4 years. I have a show, I lost 200 pounds. So that's a plus size show. I don't do that anymore. I'm not plus size. And people will pitch that show, but they want to talk about business stuff. So that's unrelated to the show. So you need to make sure that the show is active, that you're a good fit for that show, that you're comparable to the other guests on that show. And also, do they have guests? So many, you'd be surprised how many shows get pitched. They don't even have guests, or their guests are female and males are pitching the show, or there's some criteria. So before you even do what you're the next step, you need to actually listen to the show and you need to pitch accordingly to, if the last person they had on was a dentist and you are a dentist and you pitch the same thing, that's not going to be a yes because your content's already been covered. So you're not only considering if you're a candidate, you're actually pitching against the back catalog of content. So you need to look at the previous content to discover what to pitch before you even send those assets out. But yeah, you need an online press kit and you also need a one sheet. So with you being a personal branding expert, you need to have your headshots, you need to have your messaging right, you need to have your talking points, you need to do a whip around all your online assets to make sure that the messaging is consistent, to make sure that everything's working, because as a producer, the first thing I'm going to do, well, when you finally get through to, okay, I'm ready to have a look around, is I'm going to cross-check and verify everything, and a producer can do that in lightning speed, and they can get 30 messages very quickly. And if you don't have that right, it's going to be a no. So yeah. Think about this process as a series of doors, and every step along the way is getting through that door.
Yeah. I get pitched weekly and some of them are hysterical.
Ryan, tell us about who pitches you, what you get pitched, what you like, what you don't like. What's the insider info?
Well, you can tell very quickly within the first couple of sentences whether they even have a clue what your podcast is about. And those are my favorite ones to read because they will pitch me hey, can you have so-and-so on? They've done these great and wonderful things. And I look at it and go, yeah, but that has absolutely nothing to do with my podcast. Like, it's completely unrelated. So it tells me that all they did was they found podcast host in my profile somewhere and they're just blasting stuff out. So it's like spamming the hosts. And I've responded to a couple of them and just said, hey, have you even listened to my podcast? And they never respond back.
Sometimes if I'm feeling cheeky, I'll say, great, how much weight have you lost?
Yeah.
From the weight loss podcast. Right. None. I'm like, okay, well, this podcast is about losing 200 pounds. So sorry.
Right.
Yeah, I agree. I agree.
Yeah, it's just like just take the time to understand what the podcast is about first. You have a much better chance of getting me to finish reading your email. But when you pitch me somebody who's completely unrelated to anything that is remotely close to what I want to talk about on this podcast, then you're never going to get me to say yes.
The other element is the pitch is not about you, it's about the host. So they're even if they're saying, hey, I'm great, I've done these things, so what, who cares? It's actually not about you, it's not even about the host, it's about the audience. So if I'm sending you a pitch, I'm actually pitching the audience. Yep. And you are the gatekeeper of the audience deciding if I'm the person to deliver the content that they need to hear. So there's three people involved in a pitch and four if you've got an agency doing it. So you really need to be mindful of that relationship.
Tell me what a podcast one sheet is.
So a one sheet is a PDF document that is a reflection of your brand. So it has all your brand colors, your brand logo, your headshot, and the layout should reflect your brand as well. But it's a quick guide to, do I want this person on the show? So it will have a short bio and it will have sample topics and sample talking points as well as ways to reach out. So it's a one-page document that's a pitch document to get through to hosts that encapsulate who you are, who you're speaking to, what value you bring to the audience, an example of what kind of a guest you will be.
It's sounds very similar to a speaking one sheet. So for any speakers who are listening, it's most likely the same type of document that you would send to conference or event organizers.
Yes, I would say it's the Marie Kondo version of that. I know exactly what you're speaking about, but it's that 50%. So okay. A lot of that have a lot of extra things on it. And so it doesn't really have the, this person is great. And it doesn't have all the logos and all that stuff. It's kind of the meat and potatoes of here's what the person brings to the table. So yes, it's a Marie Kondo version of that is the best way to say it.
Right. Okay, cool. So now within the Talent Squad, you do a couple of different things. You do some consulting and then you do podcast tours. And I want to get into the podcast tours thing here in a minute. But let me ask you this first. Do you help people start podcasts?
No. So we talk to people about getting their podcast tours going. So okay. It's for people that don't want to outsource to an agency, but they want to do podcast tours.
Okay. And then after somebody starts a podcast, what are some of the biggest challenges that you see they face if they come to you for some consulting to say, hey, can you help me with my show?
So the biggest thing people say, how do I grow my audience?
Okay.
And then how do I attract an audience? And then I think it's the biggest problem is momentum and reinventing the show. And then with podcasting, because you are responsible for your own back catalog. And if you're doing 52 episodes a year, it's consistently finding new guests, new content. There's so many moving parts. So I think people struggle with, I've got to do the recording. I've got to do the editing. I've got to do the artwork. I've got to do the show notes. I've got to find new guests. I've got to come up with interviews for the guests. It's a lot of work more than people think, even though it's pretty fun.
Right.
It's a full-time job for many people. Yeah. So unless it's monetized, which I guess is one of the big questions, is how do I monetize it? Then you are investing in it. And it's not necessarily money, it's time. But you will need to invest money if you want to get back your time. So it's pay the piper, which way are you doing it?
Yeah, so, back to what we said earlier. It's easy to start them. It's really hard to sustain and maintain it.
So I think one of the mistakes people make is I want to do this. I love this. And it's not a mistake because, well, you don't know until you have to do all the moving parts, what it involves and how much time you've got for it. But 52 episodes is a lot. You can do it per month. You can do it bi-weekly. You can batch it. So I think that doing one per week for the rest of your life is a never-ending mountain to climb, but maybe batching once a quarter is a more easy target to go for. So I think that breaking that up is going to make it easier for you. And also starting a podcast without a purpose. So I want to do a podcast because it's cool and I want to talk. Awesome. That's great. But again, who are you speaking to? What do you want them to do as a result? What are you making? Who are you making it for? And what are you going to do with what you've made?
Yeah.
So the biggest thing is, and I do in my consult, I'm just asking you the hard questions that if you don't know the answer to, we need to figure that out. Because once you get the answer, you can do it. But it's asking questions that you may not have thought of that you need to know.
You said something there I want to touch on. Do with what you've already made. A lot of people, myself included, I'm guilty of this. You put out episodes, you get into this cadence of once a week, and it's work, and you put it out. And then you build up this collection of old episodes that just kind of sit there and don't do anything with them. What do you recommend or what should people think about doing with their past episodes?
There is so much and it is absolutely underutilized. And that's what I'm saying. And you don't necessarily have to do 52 to get the bang for your buck on a podcast, because I'm about to tell you the way you can slice and dice and send it out and you'll be shocked at how much you can do. So you can break it up into segments. You can break it up into sound bites. You can pull quotes from that. You can put that on Instagram. You can take little snippets and embed it in your emails. You can put it on your website. You can then use interviews that you've had. And if you're doing speaking, you can play that in a presentation that you're doing. So I don't know how many we've just said then, but they're ways that people don't think of beside of just making it and pumping it out, because it's not just putting the episode out, build it, they will come. You've got to send it out in different ways, because if people aren't used to listening to podcasts or if they don't know that you're doing one, this is a way to Trojan horse it in there to get them interested. Oh, I didn't know he had a podcast. Yeah, I can listen to that 30 seconds, 90 seconds, 3 minutes, but I may not sit down and listen to 30 minutes every day of a back catalog now of 150 episodes.
Right.
So, and the other thing is, Ryan, you've done so many episodes. Okay, well, let's go back to that episode 5. Mm-hmm. Because if I've just heard about you for the first time now, I haven't listened to that episode. So what can you do with that episode to introduce it now? If you're sending out a newsletter, there should be back catalog stuff as well as your new stuff in that email to reintroduce me in a palatable way that doesn't require me to listen to 150 hours of audio.
Right.
So, and there's the what I've just said, probably times another 20 different ways you can slice and dice it. So for every platform that you've got, you can package it up in a different way and send it out. It's a blog post. It's an ebook. It's a newsletter. It's a quote. It's a LinkedIn. You can even do a live and play some of the audio within the live. That's a different way to do it. I could go all day. It's amazing.
Plus the video, just like this video, absolutely. Like this too. So
plus the video, then you slice that video up and you put that across platforms. You put it on YouTube. So 130 minutes is a lot of stuff you can do, a lot.
Yeah, I think people definitely underestimate what they can do with their, even their current episodes, let alone all the stuff that they've produced in the back end.
And then it's the relationship building with the host in addition to that, which we've said, but don't forget you're pulling your quote and the host's quote. So you may put that quote on top of an image of you, but you can also put the quote on the top of the image of them. So you can quote somebody else and then tag them. So you're reaching their audiences every time through what they've said in your show. So you can put out your own audio and their audio at the same time. So that's 52 pieces, assuming that it's a weekly episode, of other people that you're highlighting where you're reaching their audience as well and getting tags every time across platforms.
Right. Also, an additional one is you can take show notes, highlights, create lead generating documents. For example, I'm thinking 52 ways that you can repurpose your podcast episodes as one for this discussion.
Yeah. You can make it into lead magnets. You can make it into resources. You can make it into checklists. You can make it into how-to. You can make it into the video. You can make it, it's like with any piece of content. But podcasts, like right now, we're audio and video, so that just, it's a lot.
Right.
And I think I don't think it's wasted. I just think it's a missed opportunity. Again, people don't know what you don't know, and it's probably going to take you a while before you like, oh, okay, well, this is what it takes to make a podcast. This is what I've got out of it, and this is what I can do. It's a learning curve.
We could probably talk about this topic for a really long time, but what I want to talk about now is podcast tours.
Yes.
So tell me, what is a podcast tour? It's the first time I've heard that phrase.
So a podcast tour is like a speaking tour you can do without leaving the house. It's going on multiple podcasts and it's doing it intentionally. So people say, I want to be a podcast guest. Great. They might go on one or two. It might be with people that they know, but it's like a media tour where you intentionally set it up, do multiple, schedule them, go out there and use it as part of a PR or branding strategy.
Okay. Who is a good candidate for a podcast tour?
I would say experts, influencers, authors, business owners, anybody that has a message that can actually help people with practical information. But also you do need to be willing to be a storyteller and be comfortable behind the mic and speaking.
But let's talk about that. Say somebody comes to you and they say they want to be on a podcast. How do you prepare them for that?
So again, at the Talent Squad, we say practice in private before you go public. So having been in radio for decades, I've got a good idea if people are going to be comfortable on the mic, a good storyteller. In speaking to them, I'll know if they've got their expertise. But sometimes you have to do the pre-work to set it up and do some practices before you go out there. So that is having your structure in place beforehand. Like we were speaking about the one sheet and the online press kit, that helps people break their topics up so they know what they're speaking about and what they're hitting. So I would say going in with your topics prepared is definitely a way to prepare for your tour. Having your tech, as we said, you can't just show up and have mess in the background, not have your camera right, not have a proper microphone, not have your speaking topics, not have a scheduling link. So you have to make sure you've got all the things in place beforehand. And then you have to have things in place on the other side for, okay, it's published now. I need to pull my weight and I need to push that out across platforms and share it on both sides. Yeah. So I think it's having a prep strategy, an interview strategy, and a post strategy.
I want to talk about post. So we're interviewing here. I control the podcast when it's finished editing. How do you, as the person who's being interviewed, make the most of something that you don't own? Like, I may give you links and images and all that stuff, but then how do you take that and make the most of it?
The first thing is that you can't be responsible for what somebody else is doing, or you can't necessarily rely on them. So even though most of the time the host will say, hey, your episode's gone live on 2 o'clock on a Tuesday on whatever the thing is, mm-hmm. I would still track it to make sure that I know when it comes out, just in case they don't tell me that information. So an easy way to do that is listen notes, and you can set up reminders or you can do Google alerts. So my first step is I want to know when that's gone live. The other thing is often there's cool artwork that they have particular to your episode. So I want to make sure I share that across all my platforms. I want to make sure that I've got the tag correct of the host. They will often give you a lot of the stuff because they want it pushed out well. But if you want to be a good guest and you want to squeeze the most juice out of that interview as well, you need to do your side of the research, you or your team. So you get the graphics. And if they don't make a graphic, make one yourself. And then also, do they have particular hashtags? Get that. And you can never pull the audio. I can't just take your audio and put it in my podcast feed. So you have to be respectful of the host and tag them on everything. But you could pull a small piece of the audio if they don't already do this, like 30 seconds, and stick it on an image or something. But you credit the host and then you would tag them and send it back to them. So it's a gift to the host. So you don't take anything without permission, but those are a few ways that you could share that out. And then you put it in your scheduling software to keep pushing it out. You would put it on LinkedIn. You would put it on Instagram. You would put it on Facebook stories. You would put it on Instagram stories. You would put it on the bottom of your email. There's all these things you would do.
There is so much information in this show. It's unbelievable. And my mind's about to explode with some of this stuff. Even though I know not all of it, but a lot of it, it's still, to hear you say it, it's just, it can be a little bit to wrap your head around, I think, for some folks.
It is. And you don't have to do everything. I'm just telling you all the possibilities, because I want you to understand there's so much that you can do. Yeah. You don't have to do everything. And I'm just also saying that, yes, the host will often do things, but you don't have to wait for somebody else to do something to take advantage of podcasting. You'll know what works best for your audience, but also it's a gift that you can give the host. And if you're spending the time, we've already spoken how much time it takes just to find a podcast to even pitch before they've said yes. Right. If you get that yes and you did that interview, why wouldn't you want to get the most out of it and share it with the most people? Because the effort that's gone into it prior to it going out is, you want people to hear it, right?
Yeah.
And you should be so proud that you got picked, because podcasts, if it is a weekly episode, they've only got 52 spots a year. You're one of those 52. People discount podcasts like, oh, it's only got 400 listens per episode or whatever the thing is, but they are niche listeners wanting to hear exactly from you in what you're saying. It's not like we said the 9 o'clock on the Today Show, you happen to listen for 3 minutes at 9 o'clock on Tuesday in May. People have gone in going, I want to listen to Ryan. I'm interested in personal branding. Here's Kelly. Like, they've intentionally gone to listen to your episode.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to listen to a gardening podcast unless I want to do gardening. Right. I wouldn't even know it exists. I'm not looking for it. I don't care. So the people that are listening to you want to hear from you. It's your responsibility, in my opinion, to squeeze the most juice out of that interview, because you've done a good job and so has the host.
I want to wrap up with something that I think most podcasters struggle with, which is show notes. I know people who do no show notes. I know people who do little show notes. I know people who do highlights. I know people who do the entire transcript. Is there a best practice when it comes to show notes for your podcast?
Full disclosure, my first paid entree into podcasting was writing show notes. So I think they're important. Yeah. But my view has changed. I'll say that. I used to think it was for the reader. I'm writing show notes for the audience to read, and I put a lot of effort into it. Now I think that it's actually for SEO and discovery purposes.
Okay.
I don't know if people are actually really reading show notes as closely as I once thought. Yeah. I think it's more about keywords, about summary, going in, having a look and deciding if you want to listen to the show and delve deeper into the episode. Or it's not necessarily about the context and the content of the summary because people will listen. It's more about the links that have been mentioned in the show. Like, oh, I heard Kelly speak about this website. I don't have to remember the website. I'll go and click on it because it'll be in the show notes. So I look at it as cliff notes as opposed to extensive summary where I'm getting the information. But it is important for keywords and SEO.
Yeah. When I first got started, I used to do the, okay, listen to the tape recorder, stop.
Yep,
type it, that was my job. Rewind. Type it up, go forward. You know, it would take me 2 or 3 hours to do what I thought were great show notes, only to find out later that like people don't look at them as much. However, I did notice that Google will find those show notes for certain keywords and people find the podcast that way. So I think it's important from that standpoint for sure. I just don't think you need to be as anal retentive about it as what I was when I first got started.
Yeah, we feel the same on that. Yeah. So important for SEO, important for discovery, important for clicking and finding links and resources and link backs, not so much for the actual content and learning purposes.
Yeah. So I know that you and I could talk about this topic for a very long time. However, all good things must come to an end. So for those folks who are listening who would like to learn more about the Talent Squad, about you, how, what you do, how you help, and are interested in booking a podcast tour, what is the best ways for them to get in touch with you?
TheTalentSquad.com. That's
super,
it.
Super simple.
One call to action on a podcast, TheTalentSquad.com. Make it memorable.
Awesome. I love it. Kelly, do you have any final thoughts, tips, words of wisdom that you'd like to pass on to anybody listening today?
Yes. I would like to say, just do it. If you are interested, don't be scared off by the scale. I know I've said a lot of things and there are a lot of moving parts, but practice in private before you go public. Even if you just do it on your laptop with a microphone to yourself, you don't have to publish it. If it's something you're interested in, you are probably going to become a podcast evangelist just like Ryan and I are. It is so much fun. You will love it. So don't be scared off because you don't have to look into the eyes of a million people and you can practice when you start out with no one listening to you. And that's for if you want to host your podcast or if you want to be an interviewee. So if you're interested, go for it.
I love it. I thought of this as you were speaking, so I'm going to share it. I started my podcast for very selfish reasons. I wanted to learn more about personal branding for myself. And I thought, if I have a podcast, I might be able to reach out and talk to people that I wouldn't normally get a chance to talk to. But I also really quickly figured out that what we were talking about was super important information for lots of different people. And so I think, as you said, if somebody's interested in doing it, just do it. Like, get out there and do it.
Yeah. And I think what you said is actually key. Think about podcasts in a different way. It's not necessarily about reaching the masses, being a star, being the host, and entertaining people. You can use it for content. And like you said, you can use it for connecting. So think about it as a medium and the different ways you can use it that aren't the traditional, this is an entertainment medium, because it can be for learning purposes, like you said, in a reverse engineered way, which is actually genius.
Well, I don't think I looked at it as genius at the time, but I had a guest, Dory Clark, who said this.
Yes, who's been a guest on your podcast, by the way.
Yeah, three times. Catalog. She said something that I still remember today. Podcasting, in her view, is what she refers to as a giving request, meaning I'm going to give her something in exchange for her time, as opposed to a taking request where I walk up to somebody and say, hey, can I pick your brain for a minute?
Absolutely.
So I'm giving her my audience in exchange for her time. And then I found out how much money she gets paid for an hour to do a speech. And she gave that value to my audience for free.
Absolutely. You've hit the nail on the head.
So if you haven't started a podcast, you're thinking about starting a podcast, do it and give Kelly a call because she can help you get it out there faster. Kelly, thank you very much for being a guest on the show today. Appreciate your time and everything that you shared with everyone who's listening.
Thank you. It's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you, Ryan.